This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Christopher Scott and I'm here with Natalie Estribeau from Vinoble Franco U. How are you?
Hi, yes, I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. We were talking to you last week about Franco U as a co-op and what they do, and a little bit about where you grow your grapes in the sort of south west of France, right on that near the border with Spain, isn't it, in the Oud region?
Yes, yeah, very close to Spain. Yes.
Natalie, you're the head winemaker here at Franco U.
Yes, I am the head winemaker at Foncalio. Yes.
Sorry about that. I should have introduced you better. I'm terrible at that. Want to talk about this week a wee bit about rosé production, because obviously rosé is very popular at the moment, and you guys have got, I had a look on your website, you guys grow a mass of different grape varieties, and we'll zoom in on rosé production in a minute, but the classic grape varieties in the southwest of France are Grenache, Carignan, Sanso. They're the sort of three, maybe Mourvèdre as well, but might be a bit cold where you are for Mourvèdre.
We've got a bit of Mourvèdre as well, but it's not the biggest of our vineyard.
Yeah, but I was on your website, and you're growing all sorts of weird and wonderful things. A couple of grapes that I would not have expected to coming out of the south of France is Albarino, which is the Galician grape variety, you know, the Spanish white grape variety. How does that grow there? Because it's got thick skins for all the wet climate, but I've never heard of it in a Mediterranean climate before.
Yes, but, you know, our terroir are really diverse. We've got vineyards from, as we said last week, from Carcassonne to Béziers. And near Carcassonne, we've got some cooler climate as well, influenced by the Atlantic Ocean as well. So it's a bit more, slightly more continental climate. And this is where we've planted the Albarino. So it's in our coolest area. And it's doing great, this Albarino.
One of the grape varieties I kind of like is, well, I've had 100% single varietals, is Petit Verdot, which is a grape variety you see in Bordeaux, you only see a tiny amount of it in Bordeaux because it doesn't ripen very well in Bordeaux. It's not the best grape variety for Bordeaux, but over in you guys, I imagine it ripens pretty nicely.
Absolutely, because we've planted the Petit Verdot in the warmer area, so they are near Béziers, and they get ripe there, so you get full structure and with really ripe berries character, yeah, in this Albarino.
Do you blend it or do you have it as a single varietal?
We bottle it as a single varietal, the Petit Verdot.
Oh, I'll have to buy some of that. One of my favourite wines ever was a 100% Petit Verdot from Humilier in the Spain. And it was just delicious. And I loved it for ages. It had this lovely light violet top note. Oh, it was gorgeous. And you never see it as a single varietal usually. So
no, it's not very common, as you said. Maybe in Chile as well. Now you can find a little bit of Petit Verdot. But yeah, it's not the most common.
No. The grape variety that I thought was quite interesting, and I think you do make it into a rosé, is down in the south of France, you've got a region known as Picpoul de Pinot, which is a white wine, but you're growing Picpoul Noir. And yes. What's going on there?
So the advantage of Foncalio is that we are trying to be very innovative. So across the year, we've planted different grape varieties. First, we try every year some new varieties, and also we are influenced by some of the other area. So Picpoul White is only for the appellation. We are just outside the area of appellation, so we thought, oh, let's plant some Picpoul Noir to try and make rosé. And this wine is really well suited to our area. It's made up only as rosé for the time being. We're thinking maybe we are going to make some red wine in the future, but it's very well adapted and making something really fresh and really easy to drink rosé.
Is Picpoul Noir a mutation of Picpoul Blanc, if you like? Because de Pinot is Picpoul from the region of Pinot, Picpoul de Pinot, but you get Grenache Noir, Grenache Blanc. You get Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc. They're the same grape. They're just a mutation of them. Is Picpoul Noir a mutation of Picpoul Blanc, or is Picpoul Blanc a mutation of Picpoul Noir, or what's going on there?
My expertise is really winemaking, so I'm really sorry, Chris, but I need to find out. That's a really good question. I don't know.
Okay. Oh, well, I might do a little bit of research and tell the readers at the end of the show. So let's talk about rosé production. And the classic grape variety in the southern France for rosé production is Grenache as a base. A lot of people use Grenache as a base, and they'll blend other grape varieties in there. I noticed some of your Grenache-based wines are big blends, and some of them aren't. Do you want to just tell us a wee bit about Grenache as a rosé and its blending partners?
Grenache is very, very interesting grape variety for making rosé, because you get some fruit character with like a good mouthfeel together with some acidity as well. So it's one of the best grape variety for making rosé. But we make rosé from 14 different varieties today. Mm. So 30 million liters is our total production. And today we're making 37% of this as rosé wine. So from 14 different varieties. But yeah, you've picked my favorite grape variety for making rosé, which is Grenache.
I always think of Grenache's classic blending partner is something like Grenache and Sanso, or Grenache and Carignan, because the problem with Grenache is it sometimes lacks acidity, and you need to bring in some acidity with another blending partner. Obviously, you can pick the grapes quite early.
Yes. You can play around with picking earlier of some of the blocks to balance the acidity, and or you can blend, as you said. A partner that is not so acidic but works very well is Syrah as well, or Shiraz. Grenache Syrah, I think, is our most successful blend today. And yeah, blending with Carignan is like the natural blender, because of the higher acidity in Carignan. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't really see any Grenache Carignan Rosé on your website. Have you got some?
No, we have some, but we make like some specific label for customers with Grenache Carignan. We don't make some in our own range. No.
Okay. That makes sense. You do a rosé, Cabernet Franc rosé, and I think of Cabernet Franc as Loire Valley, nice and cold climate, and it makes good reds and rosés. Bordeaux, they grow it there, it's quite warm for Bordeaux, and you think about Mediterranean, south of France, and I think, gosh, that must be too warm for Cabernet Franc. What's going on there?
No, it's not too warm. To be honest, growing like Cabernet Franc in the Loire Valley is not maybe my favorite place, because I like wines where grapes can ripe well. So Cabernet Franc is well suited here. But again, it's a bit like Albarino. It needs to be planted in the coolest area of our terroir. So Cabernet Franc to make rosé, if you've got that in the coolest area and you harvest your grape not too late in the season, then you can really have a touch of leafy character in the wine with like a really nice acidity.
What about a grape variety? I think you're making a rosé. Well, no, you can't be. Vermentino, because that's an Italian. Well, I think of Vermentino as an Italian white grape variety. I think in the southern France, they call it Rolli or Malvasia.
Roll. Exactly.
Yeah. How do you pronounce it?
It's called Roll.
Roll.
It's exactly the same grape variety as Vermentino. Nowadays, we also call it Vermentino. But yeah, it's white only. But in Provence, they ferment together some Vermentino with the red grape varieties. And we've tried some of that as well. So we do some co-fermentation between red and white. So when you can harvest the grapes at the same time, it's really great to co-ferment them.
Okay, let's talk about winemaking, which is what I really wanted to talk about anyway. But and start with this co-fermentation, because you do see some vineyards doing that, and you will see people co-fermenting. And the classic one everybody refers to is Northern Rhone, where you co-ferment Viognier and Syrah, and the idea is the Viognier gives you a little bit more color stability, and you sometimes get a nice aromatic lift from that little bit of Viognier co-fermented with it. But you're making rosés out of these co-fermented wines. So it's not color stability you're looking for.
No, it's not color stability. It's complexity in terms of flavor. When you co-ferment, you always get a different complexity rather than when you blend later on. So when you can co-ferment, but you cannot co-ferment whatever you want, whenever you want, because for an example, Colombard that's harvested late, you cannot co-ferment with something else because you wouldn't want to harvest them too early and to get like green grapes. You still want to harvest at the right time when the maturity is perfect. But yeah, doing co-fermentation like is a big plus. We've been trying with Sauvignon Gris. We've got like in the Corbière, we've got a château called Château Augléon. So it's a property owned by Foncalieu. And we do co-ferment Sauvignon Gris and also with Pinot Noir, which is quite unique, I think. And you get really much better complexity than fermenting them separately.
So when you say complexity, what in particular is it? Is it different aromatics? And if so, what are they?
It's different aromatics. It's really, I don't know, it's the addition of this, like fermenting and the enzymes working on the aroma precursors that make this much better complexity. There are a few studies around that, but it's really hard to explain today. And there are a few theories being made as we speak, but it's really hard to explain what is making like this. It is more complex and flavor in terms of wine.
But if I had two wines, one co-fermented, one blended rosé, I'd be able to taste the difference?
Yes, you would. You would. It's not the same wine.
No.
So you could almost tell that there is something else, like, for example, with the Sauvignon Gris, there is a tropical touch that you don't, so it's from Tiol, the molecules Tiol, that you can pick in the wine, but I don't think you could tell there is Sauvignon Gris in the wine. Rather, when you blend them together, you could tell there is a bit of white wine in the blend.
Okay. You said that you've got a pick them together. I presume you've still got monocultural vineyards where it's all Sauvignon Gris and it's all Pinot Noir, but these two grape varieties, they happen to have a roughly the same picking time, is that right?
Exactly, yes. They have to have to be able to have the same picking time, otherwise you couldn't co-ferment, yes. Yeah.
You couldn't just leave them at a really cold temperature, yeah, press and store the white grapes anyway at a cold temperature until later on?
No, that's a good option, but you have to have the capacity to do that, and you need a lot of cooling to be able to do that. You wouldn't take the risk of wasting the juice if the fermentation was about to start. So it's more about capabilities, but you could think about doing that. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The other thing that you talk about in your website is you do a little bit of lees work sometimes with your rosés. Just so the listeners know, lees are the dead yeast that sink to the bottom, and sometimes you'll leave the dead yeast in contact with the juice for a period of time. And historically, rosés, I always think of being a grape variety where you're looking for fruit. And with lees work, you can get texture, but you can also sometimes get those autolic characters, you know, yeasty, bready, biscuity notes sometimes. What are you trying to achieve with lees work and rosés?
We do lees, as you said, lees is adding some like extra texture. It's adding like a touch of softness in the wine. And also we're looking for fruit and freshness in the rosé. A bit of extra texture is good for longevity of a rosé. So we're not going to work on the lees for 6 to 9 months like we do for some whites. But we're going to work with lees. It depends on the grape variety and the wine every year and the quality of the wine as well and the balance and its balance. But between like 4 weeks to 3 months, I would say maximum, we're working with lees. It always adds a bit of complexity into your wine and a bit of mouthfeel that's also helpful in the balance of the wine.
You said that lees also helps with longevity. My experience with Provence rosés is get into them, drink them quickly, drink them up, and then move on to the next vintage. Like there's a rosé produced in Tavel and Lirac in sort of southern Rhone, which have reputations for ageability, and you can buy them in their onion colour. You know, they're showing definite signs of ageing. Is that a style of wine you're trying to produce with you guys, or is it still very much a get into it and drink it style?
We're talking a lot about that today. It's really a hot subject here. The main thing as well is we don't want like a gap in quality between a vintage and another one. When I say that, we don't want the wines to evaluate too quickly, so they get like tired and not really nice to drink at the end of the season. So the longevity I'm talking about is not to try and get rosé wine to age for like 2 or 3 years or 5 years. That's not the main thing. It's more like to get a longevity for like to be still nice for 18 months. And I think it does help for that. If you want wine to age longer than that, today we're trying to ferment with like oak. So we do some fermentation in barrels. I think it really works really well.
You can correct me on this, but for me, my understanding, and I'm not the best at this, but my understanding is it's the longevity of a wine is all about how much oxygen the wine sees before fermentation. And the idea being that if you see a lot of oxygen, if you like use an open top fermenter or a basket press, the grape juice is going to see oxygen. It loses some of the aromatic flavors that are oxidized, but then when you go through fermentation, that's reductive, so it cleans up the oxidation, but you lose those aromatic flavors, which might turn nasty further down the track. Whereas if you want the wine to be not age but have lots of upfront fruit, you keep the wine away from oxygen before fermentation, and therefore when it sees some oxygen later on, it's quite unstable to, and it can create some unpleasant flavors. Is that the way you look at it? Because that's the way I look at it. I mean, I could be wrong here.
This technique is used for Chardonnay as well. As an example, you like over-oxygen the must before fermentation, but we don't work currently like that for rosé, because if you do that, it doesn't help the color. We're trying other techniques for rosé, like warming up the grapes to try and extract some other flavors. Currently, we don't oxygenate the rosé juices like it can be done on Chardonnay for longevity. It's more like trying to work with fermenting in barrels, but unoaked, just to give like really the structure and the mouthfeel to the wines.
But don't you think if you ferment on barrels, won't that introduce some oxygen to the wine before fermentation?
It does. I think you're right. But we don't, what I was saying is that you don't like over oxygenate your juice. I cannot speak English anymore. Sorry.
That's all right. If you're doing barrel fermentation, what I'm saying might still be valid because you are doing some exposure to oxygen during fermentation.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. Yep.
And just on the pressing, because we talked about basket presses and that, all your rosés have got that Provence colour to it, that very light style of colour to it, which is from direct pressing, where you get the grapes, you just basically press them almost straight away. And you don't get much colour extraction from it. Do you do any rosés with skin contact?
No, we don't today. We don't do any rosé with skin contact. We are thinking maybe redeveloping some bases in the future, because the rosé market is growing and it's not just one style now. We have to add more diversity to our style. But currently, it's only direct pressing. The market is also dictating us what it wants, and the color, like Provence style, is really the aim today.
Yeah, I did an interview with a guy who's blind a few months ago, and he was like, "What's the point of Provence rosé?" You know, for him, because he can't see the color, and he's going, "Jesus, I might as well not bother with it, because if you don't have that lovely," and in this face, the colour is very nice. It's a very nice colour, but you do lack some of the flavours that you get from a little bit of skin contact, and the wines can be a little bit lacking intensity, perhaps. Do you think that's true, or
the fruit is different? And but why people do like pale rosé, because they are like refreshing, easy to drink. I think a lot of people don't want to think when they drink rosé. It is relaxing and nice to drink. So our aim is really to make refreshing wine. Other winemaker making rosé with a bit more color is always nice. We were talking about the team a few weeks ago, and we thought, oh, we miss the Shiraz rosé we used to make like 15 years ago. So that's why we're thinking making some this year.
Okay. And when you're making rosé, you said you do everything via direct pressing, and we've talked about lees work and barrel work and things like that. What temperature do you guys ferment the juice at? Because normally I always think of rosé, you ferment it at a low temperature so that you hold on to fruit characters. But what would happen if you were to do it at a warmer temp? And do you do it at warmer temps?
No, so everything, all the rosé we make are temperature control. We must do that. But now, today, we don't tend to ferment at very low temperature, like 12 to 15 degrees. Because you get fermentation character. What we're aiming at, we are really trying to get the real fruit from each grape varieties. So you need to ferment between 17 and 19 degrees to get the fruit variety, like Tuol on Shiraz, for example. We want to avoid this like fermentation character.
Is that pear drops is the classic one most
people... Yes, exactly, pear drop, yes.
Is there any other fermentation characters that are common? But pear drops are one I always think of.
Bubblegum pear drops, yeah.
At the beginning of this interview, we looked at all these crazy varieties that you're growing. What else are you doing? Are you going to be doing new varieties? What's going on?
Yes, our chief agronomist is from Argentina. He's been at Foncalieu for 20 years now. He's called Gabriel Rech, and he's a bit crazy. So he's made us plant some new varieties.
All Malbec, right? All Malbec. He's from Argentina. It's all Malbec.
we've got Malbec and clones from Argentina as well. We've got that. I was asking him, can we plant Bonarda as well? No, I think Bonarda could be a great variety here.
Well, it should be, because it originally came from Piemonte Bonarda, so it went from Piemonte to Argentina and now back to you guys. It's not that far away.
No, absolutely. So then maybe the next one to plant, yes, to explore. And Mencia as well. I wanted Mencia.
Mencia? The Spanish grape grown in Berthia.
The Spanish grape Mencia, yeah. I think we should try and plant some, yes. Yeah. I mean, so there's lots of like work being done in the vineyard and a lot of new plantations that are tried all the time. So the newest were like Artaban and Vidoc, which are like two new grape varieties. We've not made any rosé yet. We've chosen to make red, just to really understand the potential of these grape varieties. But in the next few years, we will be making some rosé as well. And we've got other new varieties like called Sorelli and Floreal that are going to be made as wine in the next couple of years.
Last question. We've talked a lot about rosé. I've been on your website. You've got quite a lot of white and red wines in there as well. One thing that you don't produce, or I couldn't see anyway, is Limoux, which is a sparkling wine from down your ways.
Yes, but we don't have any vineyard in this area at all. So we've got Carcassonne with the IGP Cité de Carcassonne, but we are not. Also, we are very close to Limoux. We are not in the area of Limoux, so we don't produce Limoux at all. We're thinking about producing like a rosé, possibly a pet nat, so pétillon, that stands for pétillon naturel. But yeah, we're not in Limoux, so we have.
There's lots of different Cremant appellations in France. Is there a Cremant for your area, apart from Limoux?
No, we don't have any Cremant either in our area. No, not yet. Not yet. There was a plan. There was a plan at some point to make like a Cremant IGP oak, but there's nothing like that at the minute because you need an AOP to make a Cremant.
Oh yes, you will, won't you? Okay. Yeah. All right. I think that's everything, Natalie. That pretty much ends the interview. Thank you very much, Natalie.
Thank you, Chris. Bye.
Cheers.